This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com.
Welcome to the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest edition of the Toastmasters podcast. We have yet another exciting episode for you. Today, our guest is Shelley Ann Lovell. She's the executive chef and operator of the Firewood Food Stop, a Cajun and Creole restaurant in Trinidad. She's been a Toastmaster for 2 years with the Napuyo Toastmasters in Arima, and she was featured in the May 2015 Toastmaster magazine. In fact, she's right on the front cover. Welcome, Shelley Ann.
Thank you very much, Craig, and good evening.
Is it okay if I call you chef?
That's no problem. I've been called Chef Master even.
Chef Master. Wow.
But Toastmaster, who's the chef?
That's pretty exciting. I have to ask you this question. My better half has got me involved watching all of these shows on the Food Network, all the different cooking shows and competitions. And you see people, you see lots of exciting things happening, including a lot of people being intimidated and berated. How accurate are these shows?
Sometimes I wonder that myself. But actually, I think they're pretty much okay. They're accurate. It's just that sometimes the time that you have allotted for the show is shorter than the time that it would actually take to do whatever they have to do. So you have a lot of editing and editing out of the program. So it will seem like, how can they do that in such a short space of time? And how did they actually achieve that? I would have taken longer. But when you actually put some of their tips to use, you realize, yeah, it actually works. So I think they're pretty much accurate, but it's just a little TV stunt that happens at times.
I was thinking more along Chef Gordon Ramsay. You know how sometimes you see things flying around in the kitchen? Does that happen in your kitchen, or have you seen that happen?
It hasn't happened in my kitchen. I don't think it would ever happen in my kitchen. But yes, in my earlier days of learning to cook, I was part of the Trinidad and Tobago Cadet Force. And we had a major who was in charge of the kitchen who didn't like to see glassware in the commercial kitchen. And he would always warn us about having glassware in the kitchen. And sometimes he would just take that for granted. So there was a time when he would come into the kitchen and just throw out all the glassware out of the back door. So if you're passing at the back door, you just see things crashing and there'd be a lot of glass on the ground. So I have learned that when the chef talks to you or warns you about something, you pretty much better move quickly.
Wow. So obviously you run a totally different kitchen. Tell us a little bit about your operation.
Well, I have a restaurant called Firewood Food Stop. It's a quick stop grab-and-go restaurant in a community of about 3,000 people in La Hokita, Arima, which is on the eastern side of Trinidad. And we have a weekend hangout where you can get buffalo wings, southern fried chicken, we have fish, lamb. We have burgers that we make ourselves because we do not believe in purchasing burgers. So we have our own smoked grilled burgers. And there's something we have called Jira pork, which is our own local way of cooking pork with what you might call cumin. We call it Jira in Trinidad. So we cook it with cumin and we have corn soup. It's a great place to hang out, Greg. So whenever you come to Trinidad, you need to come to Firewood Food Stop.
As we're recording this, it's actually supper time here in Edmonton, Alberta. So I'm getting a little bit hungry, but I don't want to digress. It sounds so good. You joined Toastmasters 2 years ago. Why? Was it to help your business?
Actually, no. My business just started this year. But when I heard about Toastmasters the first time, I actually thought it was an international alcohol company. No. And they were going to launch in Trinidad. So I thought, wow, this is going to be a tasting session. And I'm going to be a part of this. I was actually invited as the photographer for the event. And when I got there, there were a lot of people talking and talking. And I thought, well, they're probably drunk already. But what I realized afterwards is that they had this session called Table Topics. And we have this character in Trinidad called a Peregrinade. And he was the person doing the table topics. And he kept saying, there's no right or wrong. There's no right or wrong answer. And I thought, if there's no right or wrong answer, I can say anything and be correct. And I was really intrigued by that. So about a year after, I found an Apoyo Club in Arima. And that's where I really joined to become a better communicator.
So despite the lack of alcohol, you obviously stuck around.
Yeah, it was disappointing, but I think I got more than I bargained for eventually.
So you've been with your club for 2 years. So far, how has that helped you become a better leader and a communicator in your day-to-day operation?
It has helped me learn how to understand people and to learn how to listen. Because in Toastmasters, you don't just learn how to communicate by doing something, but you learn by taking time to listen to others. And it has certainly helped me understand my peers and understand sometimes what they're facing at home, and to be able to help them with their situation. So it has helped me also to become a more confident person, more confident in how I deliver my project and my presentation. So it has been a great help to me and also to the people around me.
Could you give me an example of perhaps how you applied this to your team?
Well, I remember there was one person I was working with who was missing work a lot. And of course, you find that you want to bring them up to speed as how they should be at work more often. But what was really happening is that she had a child who was ill, and she had to be with the child a lot more than the norm. So being able to listen to her and to understand who she was outside of the workplace, we were able to schedule her to work in a different time slot so that she could have gotten home to take care of the child and to do things a little easier for him. And in that, she told me one day, "I really appreciate what you did for me, because it would have been easier for you to just get rid of me. And you actually made me feel more appreciated and feel like if you wanted me around." And that made me feel really good to know that I was doing something for someone and actually helping them achieve their goals in just shifting around something. So it has really helped me to understand and to communicate better with my peers.
Excellent. That leads me perfectly into my next question. And I love to use Gordon Ramsay as the example, because I think Hell's Kitchen and all the other shows that he's been in, I think everyone can relate. He obviously has his own way of doing things. Mm-hmm. In the article, you say that you believe that people grow through discovery, the opportunities to influence decisions, and effective feedback. So in addition to what you've just did with your one member, mm-hmm. how do you make that happen as a leader in your organization in general?
My leadership style is to lead from behind. I don't like to be in front. I don't like to take the pictures and to be on the front cover all the time. But I like to give my peers an opportunity to discover themselves. When they enter the kitchen, it's a whole new fascinating experience for them. And sometimes they don't really know which area they're really strong in. So what I do is to help them find that area and to really grow from it. I always tend to give young people the chance to be creative, to do a little bit of what they want to do, and to help them become the chefs that they want to become. And it has worked for them. I've seen it work with some young people. Even up to last night, I saw my nephew in the kitchen and he was making something. And I just looked on, I didn't say anything. And when he was finished, he presented it to me and he said, "I have made my own grilled chicken." So he came up with his own recipe. And what I liked about that is that he felt proud of himself. He felt that he had achieved something. And that is the kind of leadership that I want, for them to become their own leaders.
Now, you mentioned creativity. Again, referring back to the shows that people are familiar with. Quite often when you watch these shows, not only are they looking for taste, what the presentation style and whether it's cooked properly, they're also looking for creativity. They're looking for something new and something fresh. But in general, if you think about it, customers are very demanding. There's people coming in and out all the time. Kitchens can be chaotic at best, not to mention pretty hot. What do you do as a leader to instill that creativity?
What we do is we have some chat times. And this usually happens in the times when we don't have much customers coming in. So like around after lunch, before evening time, we have some chat times and we try to figure out how could we have done this differently? What could we have done to make it easier, to make it better, to improve it for the customer? We also look at things that people are looking for, the trends, and to see how we can put it in our own food. I allow the people who work with me to generate ideas and to have their input also and to see their ideas working in the kitchen. Because nothing is better than when you can look at something and say, "Hey, I did that. I created that. That was my idea." And I allow them to grow from that. Sometimes you have people in your establishment, they are great human resource, but because you don't know their talents and their skills, we allow them to die or to end up walking away with those great ideas when they can just put it to use right there where they work. So I allow them to use their creativity.
It sounds very much like feedback from a Toastmasters presentation or speech project, doesn't it?
An evaluator, yes.
So how would you parallel the two? Toastmasters and the creativity in your kitchen?
I am always fascinated by those first 10 projects a Toastmaster does when they enter the program, the competent communicator. I look at how people will take those 10 projects and interpret them differently. And it's the same thing with the kitchen. You can give someone or you can give several people the same ingredients and they will cook something differently. Some might choose to fry, some may boil, some may bake, some may braise. But at the end of it, you get a wonderful and magnificent product. It's the same thing with Toastmasters. You give people a project and you tell them, take these objectives and I want you to come up with something. And they interpret it so differently and you are fascinated at how these same ingredients can be made into so many different products. So this is what I like to see. I go to Toastmasters, especially to see how people would execute their icebreakers and how they would reach to their 10th project. And it's so different from what I did. So it's just a way of getting that creativity out of someone.
All of this probably takes a lot of patience. And again, in the article, you refer to patience and you say that patience is the utmost importance. Head chefs who communicate effectively and with respect benefit in the long run. How so?
I have learned, Greg, that you can be a boss without being bossy. When you allow people to communicate, it creates optimum teamwork. When you allow them to use what they have instead of being intimidated and staying in a corner and saying, you know what, I give up, I don't even want to be here, and they walk away. When you allow them to be themselves and let you talk with them and let them bring out what they have and you mesh it with what you have and then you come together and you create something, it works better for you. You get to understand them. You get to understand what was their dream. Why did you come here? What are you looking for? And for me, I like the idea of knowing that I can help them reach their goals and dreams and have them realize who they really are in the cooking world. So that's the way I like to work with my people and to really get them towards their goals.
Do you ever find it frustrating? For example, let's say you did have a discussion, you did get some feedback and you're adding a new item to the menu, but yet you might find that, let's say, some of your new recruits may not get it all sort of at the same time, at the same level?
That's right. And that's because people learn differently at different levels. You have those who will come in and they work really quickly and they get everything and they're good to go one time. And then you find those who are a little slower. And maybe it's because they haven't found the area where they can really exert themselves and where they're really gifted. So sometimes you just have to switch them around a little bit until they find that place where they are gifted and they really start flourishing. But the thing about it is that you really have to be patient with people and be patient to the point where you can slow down a bit for some and help them get to the level that you want them to get to. You just have to come to the idea sometimes that, okay, maybe this is just the way they are and they're going to be working at that level. You give them something that is suitable for them and you don't ever compare. I don't like the idea when you have chefs comparing one person to the other. So you say, oh, Greg came here 2 weeks ago and he has everything so well. And Charlene, you've been here for a whole year and you haven't been half of what Greg is. You don't compare people at all. You just let them grow at their level and eventually they'll find their way in the kitchen.
How do you deal with someone who knows it all?
Oh, I have had those also who come into the kitchen and they say, well, I have come from this establishment or that establishment, and I know it, so you don't have to tell me, and I can do this, and I can do it all by myself. But something you really need to understand is that every business is different, and you need to learn the culture of the place that you work. When I left hotel school back in 2005, I thought I was really set and ready to go. Until I entered a kitchen, a commercial kitchen, and it was totally different to what we had in our establishment at the hotel school. And then you realize that there is a certain culture that goes with every business. And it's not just in the restaurant industry, in any industry. And you have to tone down a little bit sometimes and learn the culture of that place, understand how they want things done, and do it the best of what they want to achieve. I mean, it's good to know that you have employees who are assertive and who are strong, but sometimes you just need to mold them a little bit into your business so that they can work for you and with you. So that's where the patience really comes in sometimes.
Excellent. I guess it's almost like knowing your audience, right?
Yes.
Now, the restaurant business is pretty competitive, and I would assume that within the kitchen, it's also competitive. Do you Do you think that's a good thing?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing because, as I said earlier, every business is different. And I can tell you from in Trinidad, we like spicy foods. So we have something we call pepper sauce that we make at home. And it's very spicy. It's made with scotch bonnets, which is one of the hottest peppers around. And we put that on almost everything we eat. But then you have some people who can't handle that at all. Mm-hmm. So you find that they may need a different type of food. So although it may be two restaurants gaining customers, gaining that clientele, you cater for different types of people. You have some who cater for the family setting. There's some for what we call liming, or you might call it hanging out. So it may be competitive, but it really caters for the different types of people.
And how about within the kitchen itself, the staff competing? You know how they're trying to earn their stripes.
Oh, well, yeah, we have competition in almost every area. You have the grill cook who wants to go against the sous chef, and the sous chef who's going against the saucier. Yeah, we have that happening. But at the end of it, everything has to go on one plate. So even though you're competing, you must have that cohesion so that the food doesn't taste confused when it reaches to the customer. So competition is good because it gets you going. It gets your ideas going. It gets you thinking outside the box and creating. I enjoy that, and I also encourage it. But of course, at the end of the day, the competition must end on the plate in something wonderful.
You encourage the competitiveness, but how do you maintain cohesiveness within your team?
Well, I'm a very competitive person also. I compete in competitions in Toastmasters all the time. But even though you compete with someone, it doesn't mean that they're your enemy or that it's an adversary. You can work together because there are things that you can learn from each other. So even when you're competing in the kitchen, I always encourage my people to learn from each other because you never know where you're going to end up or what you're going to have to do. They may have to switch positions or do hold on for one another at some time. So it's always good to know that you can understand what they do. Yeah, compete is wonderful, but also make it a learning process also.
Excellent. So what did you compete in?
I compete in humorous competitions all the time. That is my area. That is my comfort zone. So from the first time I competed at club level, I went straight up to national level and I represented Trinidad in Puerto Rico in 2013 at district level. I didn't place there, but last year I went up again for Trinidad and Tobago in St. Lucia and I was the winner of the humorous competition at Caribbean level. So I am the Caribbean humorous speaker.
Wow. Was your subject about food?
Unfortunately, no. It was actually about Toastmasters and being a Toastmaster, being evaluated. I was telling them how I don't like evaluators. I came in as a professional. I didn't need an evaluator. So I was giving my story about being in Toastmasters and then finally understanding that an evaluator is not there to criticize you, to make you feel inferior, but actually to help you develop and to grow as a Toastmaster.
Now, I understand that you've also started a club.
Yes, I started a club in 2013 in a local university that I was attending at the time. That's the Cipriani Labor College. And I started a club called SIPS Power Achievers Toastmasters. We actually got chartered in March of this year, 2015. And we are a distinguished club. In 2 months, we gained distinguished club. So we are going to celebrate at our next meeting because this is actually the end of the Toastmasters year and we're doing pretty okay.
2 months.
2 months.
2 months. You must be well on your way to your Distinguished Toastmaster designation then, even after 2 years.
Yes, I am. I actually have just one level to complete. I'm at Advanced Communicator Gold and Advanced Leader Bronze and it's more or less just my high performance leadership I have to work on now. And after that, it's just a waiting game, more or less.
Any other Toastmasters plans?
Yes, I actually want to work with some youth because I have been working with some adults since I entered Toastmasters as a mentor. And it has been fine. But what I find is a lot of people are asking me if I have any programs for children. In Trinidad, we don't have any gavel clubs. So what I want to do is start working with the younger folk, because I have three children also, and they're also interested in Toastmasters, but they can't officially be members of a club. So I'd like to either open a gavel club or have a youth project set up where young people can learn a little bit about communication and leadership and set them on their way to being great leaders.
Well, that's excellent, providing a forum for the youth. That's incredible. Well,
Yes.
I see our time is up. We've been speaking about two of my favorite subjects, food and Toastmasters. And I'm just going to ask you, I know we started with asking about food. I am going to ask whether or not you'd be willing to share a little grilling tip with us.
Well, there's two things I like about grilling. One is that when you're grilling, you have to make sure that your grill is really hot before you can put your food on it. So you make sure your grill is about 400 to 450 degrees Fahrenheit to ensure that you kill any bacteria that might be present and also to keep that food from sticking on the grill. And the second thing is my favorite, which is smoke it. As you know, my business is firewood food stuff, and we like to put a lot of smoke into our food to give it that extra flavor. So if you can use some charcoal when you're grilling to create that really rich flavor, get some smoke into your food.
So that's a good kind of smoking, I guess.
Yes, it is. The healthier smoking.
Chef Shelley on Level, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. It's been a pleasure, and thank you very much, and all the best in both your Toastmasters journeys and your culinary journeys.
Thank you so much, Craig, and it was wonderful. Thank you for having me.
My pleasure.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.